I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. We're back today with Teach Her, our series of stories about girls and young women and the many ways they learn and grow, schooling in all its forms.
It's a diploma. It's an education you can't get anywhere else. There's Strong, and then there's Army Strong.
Today we're focusing on a different type of education, a path few women take, the military. Women make up only 15% of the active duty force in the U.S. military. In a few minutes, we'll hear the story of First Lieutenant Ashley White. She served with an all-female combat support team in Afghanistan. But first off, let's gauge where things are at for women in the military. Setting the scene is Gail Pollack. She's a retired Major General, served in the Army for 36 years.
My family thought I was crazy because I wanted to go to college for my nursing education. I didn't want to do a local hospital opportunity. And I learned that the Army was looking to increase the education level of their nurses, so they only wanted baccalaureate-prepared nurses. And I thought, well, this is perfect. My family thinks it's stupid because I want to be a nurse, that I want to go to college. The Army will fund me to go to college. This seems like a match made in heaven. And then I learned how much I loved soldiers. And it was just no looking back. Every day that I was in the Army, I knew why I was there. And I was always motivated to make sure that we took the best possible care of the men and women that were serving.
And why did you feel that way about the Army? What kind of brought you to that view?
Well, that's actually a little bit longer of a story. My dad was a drinker and wasn't a real pleasant guy. But he would bring other people that he worked with, other men that he worked with, home for Sunday dinners when they were away from home, because he remembered that being really important to the men that served during World War II, to get invited home for a Sunday dinner. And one of the gentlemen that he brought home was a little older. He was in his mid-20s. And he became like a big brother to me and convinced me that even though it was a violent, scary place, I was going to get out of there and do great things. But he went off to Vietnam and had his leg blown off. And the Army Medical Department kept him alive and brought him home. So he stayed that knot at the end of my rope.
Wow.
So when I first got started, I wanted to make sure that anyone like Robin had an opportunity to come back to their family too. And then as the military evolved, it became not just the men, but the men and the women. So it didn't matter if you were a brother or a sister or a mom or a dad or a son or a daughter. You know, it was just, we have to do everything that we can to make sure that these people who are loved by others come home and function at their highest quality of life if they happen to be injured as a result of their service.
How did you work your way up through the ranks?
The same way anybody else does. Show that I'm willing to do the job and looked for opportunities to demonstrate that I could do more.
Give me an example of one of those opportunities where you said, I'm going to grab that. I'm going to show them I can do my absolute best.
You know, back in the 70s and 80s, there weren't very many women that were going to airborne school. And I said, well, I want the men that are serving and that are making the decisions about my future to know that I'm willing to go and do the tough stuff. So I learned how to jump out of perfectly good airplanes. I became an expert field medic. Only 15% of the people that attempt to become qualified as an expert field medic actually accomplish that goal. And very few of them are women. So I thought, well, between the airborne school and the expert field medical badge, they're going to know that I'm tough enough to do what needs to be done.
We're going to hear a little bit later about how big a problem sexual assault in the military is. And the Pentagon has estimated that 10% of women in the military have been raped while serving, another 13% subjected to unwanted sexual contact. Do you think this is a problem that needs to be resolved before encouraging any young women to serve?
This is a societal problem. The Department of Defense has been very good about when it decides to tackle a problem, it gets it taken care of. But we have to think about the fact that these men and women are coming from all over the country with all different kinds of family and community experiences. And if women aren't valued in their community, they don't know that women are to be valued in the military. And we have to teach them that.
So how were you treated by the men who were your subordinates?
It was never a problem. I didn't have any issues with the men that served below me.
You never heard men kind of questioning your abilities as a woman, even kind of like quietly under their breath?
No, not the junior ones. Mm. The ones who were my peers with whom I was competing to get the leadership positions, well, they weren't happy about it. You know, I don't know why you're trying to do this. You haven't been prepared for this. And I'd laugh inside the AMED, the Army Medical Department, and I was like, well, how are you prepared? Mm. What have you done to prepare yourself? I was never a wallflower.
A great segue, General Pollack, to a question about, let's say, a girl is listening to this interview. What do you think she ought to know about what life as a female soldier is like?
That it's fun, that it's challenging, that it's rewarding. And if I was 17 and I could join the Army again, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Major General Gail Pollack served in the U.S. Army for 36 years. She's now retired. General Pollack, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much, Marco.
In a heartbeat, she said. That's just what the military means to Major General Pollack.